And welcome to everybody over on YouTube. We are hopefully broadcasting properly on over the internet. I'm trying to raise our levels a little bit. I know they've been somewhat low on YouTube, so we're doing our best to fix the situation. We sound good on the radio, and sometimes on YouTube we sound low. And we're still waiting for confirmation from Rob that we are in fact on you. We are okay. So now we can continue our conversation. Oh, Kyle, you had some impassioned things to say about BlackBerry or AT&T or T-Mobile or all the phone companies.
Well, yeah, I just think there's a couple things going on there. And the last date, I guess, was Verizon. They're shutting down 3G at the end of 2022. In other parts of the world, they're keeping predecessors to 3G for low power situations or low bandwidth, a la like an emergency and disaster relief, so on and so forth. So it's interesting. I'm curious if we're going to see smaller installations like low power versions or private versions using that. I know the major carriers are reallocating some of the spectrum that at the levels of power they use to fit more channels of 5G, the next evolution in wireless. So there's going to be some repurposing of it, at least insofar as the commercial licensing of that spectrum. But there are smaller kit and like low power versions and ways to make use of. That's my main thing, I think, is just how will hardware not become waste immediately, because there have been in the past, you know, people that didn't have service but used older handsets to make emergency calls. We've covered a lot of this stuff over and over again. I don't want to get do a retrospective necessarily. And the OS thing, yeah, just having an entire phone system shut down or be shut down because the curator of it wants to go in a different direction.
Right.
And I'm not really expecting a whole lot of, like, technical advice from people or input or... I mean, I am curious, like, what people that really like the handsets are doing. I know you can run your own enterprise version of a BlackBerry and control the handset that way. Of course, again, getting spectrum and using the frequencies that it uses, you would have to be at a very low power to even experiment. You probably have to have, like, a technician's license of sorts to even demonstrate it, like at a hacker conference. But there's all this hardware that's just kind of going to sit idle. And I just say others should heed it as a warning that, like, hey, like, what if Apple was just like, you know, we don't want to support iOS anymore. We're going in a different
but
direction.
That's what they do. Apple does that all the time. That's why people have to buy 20 iPhones in their lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it I guess does happen, and it isn't so unique. But this was in the works anyway for that particular operating system, and the user base was just not there. Like, it was diminishing, and the features of some of the newer handsets and the operating systems they use were just that much more desirable. And as soon as businesses started integrating them and allowing them to be a part of their networks more regularly, and they could accommodate for them in the mixed environments of, you know, people using them for work and, of course, going back and forth or telecommuting, whatever it was, as they adopted it and got better at it, these business-oriented devices just fell further out of favor. So I just think it's kind of an interesting thing. So I don't know. I don't want to keep going on about it. But
well, it's important to let people know, and it's kind of sad, actually.
Well, I'm kind of used to it at this point, because everything I go for some of the weirder, different paths in these, at least in wireless, and so
you shouldn't be punished for that.
Yeah, it's weird how it's just, like, they were planning on discontinuing it, and it was like, but they're you're really left with nothing. Like, they kind of barely supported it, and then pushed some of the deadlines a little bit, and, like, they did security stuff for a little bit. There was, but of course their direction was going into smart vehicles and offering their sort of security service platform more so than the traditional handset that they're known for.
So maybe spin off and have a company that just deals with that. You know, it just is such a waste to have a technology that people want to be able to use, and there's no support for it.
Yeah, and another trend that's kind of really common is licensing, and so licensing a type of handset and having someone manufacture it. And there were talks of creating a new or several newer versions of the BlackBerries. But, you know, as someone who has used it, if you have this, like, unique proprietary different sort of OS, and it's lauded for certain features, but then, like, there's no real support. Like, it's great if somebody stands up to get the handset manufactured, but if it's only going to disappoint, like, when that falls out of favor or they don't want to support it. And this is common with so much hardware. There's no support for firmware. They lose interest. They want to move to the next model. They stop supporting parts. I've seen this with televisions now. We see it over and over and over again. So with phones, it's like, yeah, you're going to give me this special kind of push email or whatever BlackBerry was known for, but what happens when you go away and it just doesn't work? You
right.
know, I'm left to figure out all this proprietary stuff, or I have to get an enterprise license for something for it to work at all. Like, it's just structured in a really hostile way for the average person to carry on with it. So why would anybody who has had this particular OS, why would they want to, like, throw good money after bad, when even this new version of whatever handset that it might be licensed, it's not even certain. Like, they were supposed to have something by now, and there's no word, there's nothing about it. It just feels like vaporware. It's definitely going away.
This kind of mentality just makes me not want to buy new things, because they're just going to have obsolescence built into them, and I'll be expected to do the same thing in a couple of years. And no, I'm too cynical to believe that's a good idea. If I want to use something, I want it to last a while. And if I'm going to get something else, I don't want to feel like the thing I'm leaving behind is completely worthless, or has slowed down to the point where it's painful to use. You know, there should be an option. There should always be an option for people who are happy with what they have now, whether it's software, hardware, or a particular type of technology, like copper lines, for instance, you know, POTS lines.
Yeah, and you shouldn't just break people off like that. Just leave them with no follow-up, no nothing. Like, what happens to your accounts on these various things? I mean, we've talked about that with online web services, and that's essentially what all of the back-end or whatever other features you would get is just an account somewhere, and that all just sort of disappears, and it's you're left with no options but to consume more.
And are we turning into the cranky old people at just bemoaning the way things used to be, whether it's GeoCities or the Hotel Pennsylvania? I don't know. I never liked GeoCities in the first place. But point is, sometimes there are things in the past that work that shouldn't just be abandoned, but new things can also be used, and we can kind of bounce off each other. And I think it's good to have, you know, a mixture.
I think how it's done is the real critique, and just, I think I'm marking time in I know our words, in what we record and discuss here, and with all the stories, with everything that we cover and things that are going on, I do want to just bring it up, because it is a part of the evolution of communications technology, and looking back, I'll be glad that, you know, we took an opportunity to just look at how it went for some people. I guess I'm bearing witness, and just you know, got insight and heard what other people, what their take is on it. I'm both optimistic and terribly cynical, so I was curious. I got a lot out of it, but it's on to the next for anyone who was even passively involved in that.
And analog TV, you know, I miss that too. There's just so many things. I'm sorry, Rob, you had your hand up.
First, I want to take a brief sidestep and just say thank you to Pete on Twitter, who informs us that our YouTube levels are much better than they've been.
Oh,
so,
good.
Thanks, Pete.
Wow.
Which is good to hear, but also this is all part of, I think, something very sad about the way just just the commercial space has developed, where it used to be you make a product, and if people want it, they buy it, and the market dictates what people are getting. If people want a new thing, they'll get the new thing, and if they don't want the old thing anymore, they'll stop making the old thing. But we've gotten to a point where companies are routinely so powerful that they say, no, this is what you're getting from us now. The thing you want from us, too bad, because you're buying this newer, flashier thing. And, you know, it seems a little backwards. I was recently watching, on YouTube, I was watching strings of old TV commercials when there were multiple phone companies who were all competing with each other for our business.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would bicker in public. They would take potshots at each other, and they would talk about how great their service was. You want our service because the sound is very clear, or it's very convenient, or it's very affordable, or something. And, you know, they would have these reasons to go with them. And when there's a big company that just has a bunch of customers under their control, and they're telling them what they're buying from them. It makes me sad.
Yeah, and they're like maneuvering to survive in making profit versus a continuation of their craft and their core business. And we've seen the creep, like the scope change for many of these firms in the space and in other tech realms, but it's typical. It's typical that it gets out of hand, and then the continuation of a product to retain those customers ends up, you know, you can't connect the dots because there isn't a deal, or there's no way to build the hardware because no one can get computer chips in time or whatever. So you end up, it kind of falls apart, and there's many of these things. I think heeding the warning. There's sometimes these things go away, and it's sobering.
It is. It certainly is. Something else that people are warning us about is something called Manifest V3 that Google Chrome is introducing. EFF put out a statement about this, saying that Chrome users beware, Manifest V3 is deceitful and threatening. Yeah, them's fighting words. Manifest V3, Google Chrome's soon-to-be definitive basket of changes to the world of web browser extensions, has been framed by its authors as a step in the direction of privacy, security, and performance. But we think these changes are a raw deal for users. We've said that since Manifest V3 was announced, and continue to say so as its implementation is now imminent. Like Flock and Privacy Sandbox before it, Manifest V3 is another example of the inherent conflict of interest that comes from Google controlling both the dominant web browser and one of the biggest internet advertising networks. Basically, Manifest V3, or MV3 for short, is outright harmful to privacy efforts. It will restrict the capabilities of web extensions, especially those that are designed to monitor, modify, and compute alongside the conversation your browser has with the websites you visit. Under the new specifications, extensions like these, like some privacy protective tracker blockers, will have greatly reduced capabilities. Google's efforts to limit that access is concerning, especially considering that Google has trackers installed on 75% of the top 1 million websites. It's also doubtful MV3 will do much for security. Firefox maintains the largest extension market that's not based on Chrome, and the company has said it will adopt MV3 in the interest of cross-browser compatibility. Yet, at the 2020 Adblocker Dev Summit, Firefox's add-on operations manager said about the extension security review process, "For malicious add-ons, we feel that for Firefox it has been at a manageable level. Since the add-ons are mostly interested in grabbing bad data, they can still do that with the current web request API that is not blocking." In plain English, this means that when a malicious extension sneaks through the security review process, it's usually interested in simply observing the conversation between your browser and whatever websites you visit. The malicious activity happens elsewhere after the data has already been read. A more thorough review process could improve security, but Chrome hasn't said they'll do that. Instead, their solution is to restrict capabilities for all extensions. This worries me because, you know, Google has this habit of just implementing its own default settings or standards and expecting everybody else to simply follow along, oftentimes at great inconvenience to them. And there is definitely a conflict of interest here, as they are one of the leading advertising companies out there. I was wondering if people have any thoughts on that.
Especially because it's software and because it might inhibit some of their kind of side hustle. I think that that is absolutely conflicting. And going back, I think, to what I was saying, proprietary and like OSs that are designed that are not modifiable necessarily, that a lot of the wireless carriers supply people with, often have things on them that you can't remove, you can't take away or add an extension, you can't install software that they don't approve of. It's the same thing in a browser where they make it so that you can create customized things. So you're only able to use it the way they want you to use it throughout the life of you, throughout the life cycle of the package. But then it might just be gone, and so you were never able to use it or modify it the way you want. So you're kind of stuck with it the way they see fit, and that's it, unless you either get it their way or not. And I just find that that's what I think really infuriates people, especially with something like a browser extension where you can customize. You can make really innovative, cool things that help a lot of other users on the web.
I'd like to read a quote from a couple of people who are experts in the field. From Helen Nissenbaum and Daniel Howe. They're the creators of Ad Nauseam, great name, and Track Me Not. They say Manifest V3 positions Chrome as the all-powerful arbiter of what software lives and what dies, shattering the ideal of a diverse array of extensions serving the legitimate preferences and values of equally diverse users. In 2017, when Google banned Ad Nauseam from the Chrome store, it summarily cut off tens of thousands of users from data they had accumulated and deprived them of a free and open source extension to counter online profiling and manipulation. In hindsight, Ad Nauseam was the canary in the coal mine, as MV3 is now poised to cut off users from a range of invaluable privacy tools, including ad blockers, that thousands if not millions rely on. A browser that plays favorites to advance its owner's interest effectively chokes out innovative, independent developers while shrinking the options for individuals to shape their online experiences. This is scary. This is something that is definitely a step backwards. Guys in Skype land, what do you think?
This is very worrying. I mean, Google, at the heart of it, Google is an advertising company. They make money from showing you ads. They make money from collecting info on you so they can show you ads with more precision and sell your info to other people who show you ads and want to sell you things. And so, of course, one of the early casualties of this was an ad-blocking plugin because I am sure it has just really annoyed them this whole time that the most popular add-ons for their browsers are the ones that let you block the ads, mm-hmm. let you decide what the web gets to show you, let you take control of your web browsing experience rather than handing it over to this advertising company who makes their money selling you crap. And that has always been a danger when putting commercial interests like these in charge of the web browsing experience of most people. And it blows my mind that Mozilla is looking to follow suit with Firefox, them being ostensibly an open source software company. It's a real blow to the entire landscape of the web as we know it. And I'm not being I don't think I'm being a fear-mongering when saying this. That is what it is, and nobody's talking about it like that.
Does anyone in this see the security implications? Because so many of these tools are used to prevent malicious ads. I mean, ad networks have been really hostile and have been hijacked by people that want a way to distribute surreptitious or other kinds of packages of software. And ad networks, turns out, are a really great way to do that. So by crippling the ability of users to protect themselves from this particular method of distributing content that could have malicious stuff encapsulated or encoded in it is really egregious. It's setting people up for a lot of problems in the next couple of years or months.
Well, you know, interesting on that point, there's another story that I saw this week from the U.S. Sun. What is the U.S. Sun? Does anybody know what that is? It's either a web page or it's a newspaper or it's something else.
That sounds like one of those newfangled, like, vapor.
Well, it looks kind of like the UK Sun, you know, the Sun in London.
Nah, but that's the thing. It
has
looks
the same
like
font,
it.
But it just says the U.S. Sun over it. Okay, whatever. Maybe they're a bona fide publication. But they say Google has taken action against a major hacking operation that it thinks has infected more than 1 million devices. The tech giant's coming down hard on the so-called Gluptaba botnet, suing two Russians who are allegedly behind it. It's a notorious piece of malware known for taking control of people's Windows PC. But here's the interesting part. I mean, that's interesting, too. But Google said it has disrupted the operation by terminating about 63 million Google Docs detected to be sharing Gluptaba, more than 1,100 Google accounts, and even 870 Google ads. Yeah, so Google ads could be used to spread malware as well. It's a very real danger, but we should have the ability to determine what we want to see and what we don't want to see. If we don't want to see ads, then we should have that ability and not have it taken away from us or defeated by these massive companies. Alex, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yes. I'm kind of tired of giving my thoughts. My thoughts are that we should get the thoughts of the listeners and give out the telephone number, 802-321-4225, I believe is the correct number, 802-321-HACK.
Well, that's a really controversial stance you've taken, so we'll see if anybody disagrees with that.
You want to test that?
Test what? The phone?
Is it there?
No, it's not. Where is it? Did you lose the phone somehow? There it is. Okay, we found the phone.
Okay, I found it.
How did we lose the phone?
I just want to make sure it was there. Sometimes it goes away. This is the thing I've been saying all night.
Can I just say we prefer to get calls from people who haven't called before, only because we want to, you know, open it up, and a lot of people complain that they can't get through, and they hear the same three people. And we don't want that. We want the three people, but we also want more people. So if you haven't called before, this is us asking you to give us a call now. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. I don't know if you can hear the phone ringing, Kyle. Okay. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hey, guys. I got a 9-year-old that is curious about hacking and would like to ask you some questions.
Go right ahead.
All right, I'm putting him on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Who's this?
I'm wondering, what is the hacker, and how can you tell if it's good or bad?
That's a great question.
Alex, you have a kid. Why don't you answer this?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I like to think of there being a very big difference between a hacker and somebody who's a criminal. A hacker, and it's funny you ask this question. My son, who's 8 years old, and I were just talking about this, a hacker is somebody who likes to think differently, who's not afraid to ask questions, who's not afraid to take things apart and figure out how they work, even if he can't get it always back together in exactly the same way again. And a hacker is somebody who's willing to maybe cross some lines and break some boundaries, all in the interest of acquiring knowledge. And then once you learn something, when you're a hacker, you don't keep it to yourself. Hackers like us, like we're doing right now, we love to talk. So we're going to talk about what we find. We're going to talk about the information that we learn, and we're going to share that information. Remember when you were younger and you learned that, you know, sharing is caring? Well, the hackers really, really do believe that sharing is caring, and we share all of the information that we learn. We never keep it to ourselves. We're big, big sharers. And on the other hand, sometimes hackers are people use the term hacker in a bad way, right? When they're referring to somebody who broke the law or broke a system or took down a service on the internet or something like that. We're hearing a lot about that right now in the news. But those people aren't hackers. Those people, they're not sharing information. They're not caring about each other and trying to learn. Those people, we already have a word for them. Those people are called criminals when they cross the line. And when they steal something or when they break into a system because they want to steal information, those people aren't hackers. Those people are criminals. Hackers are people and it comes from a term of an original hacker, and Emmanuel, correct me if I'm wrong, an original hacker was somebody who was a very artful or really thoughtful programmer who came up with a fix to a software bug that was really cool, and it was called a hack. And so somebody mm-hmm. who was a really good programmer, who a really good thinker, was called a hacker. And that's still to this day what a hacker is. So I hope that explains it somewhat to you. Do you have any other questions for us?
No, but thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's really awesome for you to call. You're very welcome to call back anytime you have any other questions.
Okay.
That was a really good question.
Yeah, great question.
There's lots of ways mm-hmm. to tell, though. It's just like finding out about good and bad people. You know, you have to get to know people. You have to understand people, but you can't necessarily trust everyone. You have to. That's part of asking questions and learning about other people yourself. So if they say they're that type of person on the internet, one way or the other, it's good to make sure you know who that you can trust them before you do.
And when we say we share information, let's be clear that we don't overshare. And part of that involves our own private information. We learn how to keep that private, whereas what's going on in the world basically encourages you to share every bit of information about yourself and your private life so that there's nothing, whether it's the music you're listening to or the places that you go or the people who are your friends, it's all out there. It's all public. You don't have a thought to yourself. And I think hackers are very keen to preventing that from taking over their lives. And that's why, you know, a lot of people who are hackers, and I've also found a lot of people who are younger, avoid social networks. They avoid Facebook. They don't want their every interaction to be logged and kept track of and fed ads. You know, they want to live lives like kids and adults have done for many, many centuries. So there's good in technology, but there's also some bad that we have to be careful of.
Yeah, and a very big part of being a hacker is hackers are very interested in learning about the world around them, about how things work. And once they've learned something, they're very interested in helping other people to learn that same thing. So that's what we've all been saying about sharing information. So if you know how to do something and somebody else near you is struggling with it, you can help them, because that's the hacker way of doing things, is mm-hmm. We help each other learn, we help each other grow, and everyone at the end is doing better, is better off for it.
Our 9-year-old has hung up, and now somebody else is calling in. That was a new call. You see how cool new calls can be? So, if you're out there, please call us, and you haven't called before, we definitely would like to hear from you. We have somebody else on the phone. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes, I wish Off the Hook and Off the Hook Overtime was around when I was 10 years old.
Rebel, you know, you are one of the regular callers, Rebel, so we'll give you a minute, all right? But that's in direct contradiction to my advisement. But go ahead.
You know, I was doing the same thing when I was, you know, playing with the phone.
You
and,
still
like,
do
I was
it.
Teenager, and
we all know that. You're probably doing it right now.
Yeah. And you know, but there's nothing to play with anymore.
Well, oh, please. There's plenty to play with. We play with things all the time.
But there's no. Well, I used to, like, play with computer terminals in college, and even before then I used to play with, you know, phone systems and things like that. It was like, I was, you know, a hacker.
Yeah, it's a shame that there's no computers or phones anymore.
Well, but those kind.
Those kind, yeah, but it changes. It always changes. I mean, people were saying this in the 1980s that it's not the same as it was in the 1960s, and they were saying it wasn't the same as it was in the 40s. But there's always something new to hack. There's always something new to play with. We just have to open up our minds to it.
That's true. It's like, you know, like there's no more computer terminals. I mean, there kind of is, but there's these, like, cloud services, and it's not the same. There's no more mainframes. Everything's on, like,
check the dumpsters. They might show up there. But, yeah, you're right. Yeah, things do change. But they also they improve in some ways. But the knowledge that you have from the old technology, you can apply that to all kinds of new things. You can also teach people the theory and how technology used to work.
Right. That's true. Well, that's what Hope Conferences are for.
That's one of the reasons. Yeah, one of the things we do. Rebel, I'm going to give you one more statement to make, and then we're going to open up to a new caller.
I don't know. I guess, you know, like when you hear in the news that the hackers are creating this, Trojan horse or whatever, you know, that's, you know, not really, I mean, they call them hackers, that people who create these things to take over your computer and demand money from you to fix it and things like that.
That's the creation definitely can be a hack because it involves being clever and defeating security. It's the actual, it's using it and threatening people and trying to make money off of it. That's where you depart from the hacker world and you merge into the criminal world.
Right, that's true.
All right.
Okay.
Good hearing your voice, and I'll talk to you again in future weeks.
Oh, by the way, make it louder. Make it louder.
But we were just told it's okay. It's better, right?
We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
How about we just shout? We can do that.
Why don't we? I mean, you're hackers. You can hack the system to try and make it. That's what hacking is.
Yeah, that's
another
being here is a hack.
Thing about
it. Uh-huh. All right. We'll keep that in mind. Thanks.
Good to hear you, Rebel.
All right, 802-321-4225. Again, please, if you're a new caller, we want to hear from you first, because we want to hear from our people who we have not heard from before or haven't heard from in a very long time. How about that? 802-321-4225. Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Rebel, though. I mean, I get nostalgic about the olden days when we could Redbox, when there were payphones, when you could do things anonymously. I mean, it's definitely a lot tougher now. I can...
Oh, wait, whoa, hold on a second. It's a lot tougher now. Sounds to me like it's a challenge, and that sounds to me like something worthy of a hacker. Yeah, it's hard to make a free phone call back in the 1980s, but we figured out ways to do it. Okay, now, guess what? We won that battle, and everybody can make free phone calls now. So now, anonymity, that's the challenge, and yes, we're meeting some formidable opponents on that front, but I think we can defeat them. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think anonymity, or as you say, anonymity, is definitely the challenge these days, and that's actually what I really had in mind when I made that statement. But because everywhere you go, you're on camera. These days, just the physical presence of cameras and surveillance and ring cameras, everything everywhere.
I got to say, and your kid knows where all the cameras are. We saw him a few days ago, and he's basically pointing them all out. I don't know how you have him programmed to do that, but he's telling you where the cameras are. So, I mean, kids are really aware of this.
They really are. They're really aware. He's very good at spotting surveillance cameras everywhere. He was really interested in cameras and how they would work. And you know, years ago we would talk about, you know, PTZ cameras versus stationary cameras and things like that. He got pretty into it. He understands it. He's very good at spotting these things.
Wait. Your kid is 8. You said years ago you used to talk about PTZ cameras with this same kid? When he was, 4?
We were going into PTZ pan, tilt, zoom discussions of surveillance cameras when he was probably 5.
Oh,
maybe.
God.
Yeah. I would say he was probably about 5. But it does sadden me to think that, as a result of this awareness of all of these cameras, he's also aware that he's always being watched,
mm-hmm.
and that there's somebody on the other side of these cameras, and that makes it really difficult to fool around, to do something as a prank, to, you know, the hypothetical, you know, soap or laundry detergent in a fountain, you know, these days is deterred by the presence of overt and covert surveillance cameras.
Well,
can
I just say, though, there's a good way to counter that, and that's to not be so afraid of being punished for doing these things. So, yeah, you know, pour the detergent in the fountain, see who comes after you, and say, yeah, okay, I won't do that again. I'll do something else. I think if we live in fear of being punished all the time, I think that's the real crippling effect. But, yeah, I hear you as far as cameras, because kids, you know, just like, you know, mass shooting drills, it becomes normal, becomes something that they think is the way it's always been, and it hasn't. And we've been witnessing this kind of thing for decades, where people just are told this is the way it always has been, and we know better. We know it wasn't that way, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, and it can become a kind of social conditioning where you go so far in another direction where there's, like, anxiety if there aren't cameras, if there isn't surveillance.
That's true.
And there isn't metal detectors, and everything is, you know, locked down and patrolled and monitored and checked and rechecked.
Yeah,
and
or you feel
verified.
That if there's no camera, that means there's going to be crime or that you can commit a crime. It's just, it's programming. It's all programming, and how we counter that is so key. Yes, Alex, let me have a call, I believe.
Sure. Just a quick anecdote about this. Just, you know, a long time ago when I was over at Oxford, I showed around Professor Theodore Mayron, who was the head judge of the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia. And he had a massive undertaking of a job. And I had to walk him around from one part of the city to the other. And we got past the Radcliffe camera, and which is this iconic building in Oxford. It's a science library, actually, but it's really very well known. And we were walking past it, and I showed Professor Mayron, the head of the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia. I showed him that those light fixtures that were around the square here and going around the street and around the camera were not actually light fixtures. Inside of them were not lights. They were covert surveillance cameras. And he was absolutely appalled by the presence of these covert surveillance cameras focused on students in Oxford going into a goddamn science library.
And this is a guy from an Iron Curtain country being appalled by that.
Well, he wasn't from Yugoslavia, but he was head of the criminal tribunal for Yugoslavia.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He was prosecuting Yugoslavian war criminals.
That's
got it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but I still think people from Iron Curtain countries were appalled by that.
No, he was. You know, this is somebody who'd seen a lot, and it really shocked his conscience. And I always appreciated that sentiment. And he had to be late 70s, early 80s at the time. So
uh-huh.
It's a different perspective. I think it's an abhorrence that spans generations.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello, everybody. My name's Jim. I'm a old school hacker from back in the day and a school board member.
Oh, wow.
Life has been interesting.
That's a full plate.
Yeah, it's always been a fun job. I've liked it. You know, it's volunteer work, but it's been good.
Did you have angry parents coming after you with making demands?
Yeah, we do. And it's all sorts of things. So you've got parents making demands in opposition to other parents making demands.
Right.
And they all speak for everybody.
Yeah.
We're here representing
of course.
The community.
Uh-huh.
Like, well, you know, we got elected. You know, so we're representing the community. You're here representing yourself.
Can I ask what part of the country or what country you're from?
Oh, I'm in upstate New York.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much detail about me because, yeah, I don't want to.
That's smart.
I don't want to get crap, but I have been on the show before.
Uh-huh.
In person. It's been a long time.
Well, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
So, did you have a question?
I was just, we were talking about, you know, the outrage that seems to always be lacking when it comes to the gun violence. That just came up a few minutes ago. And, you know, it floors me that in all of the time that I've been on the school board for about 10 years, and in all of the time I've been sitting there, never have I had an angry parent come in demanding that we keep their kids safe from gun violence. And I am getting people threatening us to keep them safe from a mask. So,
yeah.
You know, I thank you guys for your sentiments there.
You're quite welcome, and we thank you for doing what you do. I don't think I could do that. But it goes to show you what we're talking about, the normalization. People just say, yeah, there's nothing you can do about gun violence, but I'm going to fight to keep a mask off my five-year-old. It's insane, and that's not normal, and we have to never stop saying that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. See, we're getting great calls, right?
Yeah, love the insight. That's something direction of the conversation wouldn't have gone without taking that. So I'm so glad for that discussion.
I'm not saying that the other callers, the callers that call, you know, weekly or biweekly are bad callers. It's just it's a huge community. So a lot of people out there, and I want to hear from more people. I want to hear more perspectives. You know, you don't have to agree with us. You can say all kinds of things.
And we're thanking our regular callers who are abstaining.
We're thanking them for not calling.
Yeah. Well, we know they're out there, and look, they're
kind of say, "We'll do you one better. We'll stop listening too."
Being well behaved as they rip their radio out of the wall.
They're yelling at the
throw it out the window.
Of course, on a radio, it's a computer now.
YouTube, yeah, they're throwing their workstation.
Or it could be an Alexa device.
Okay, fine. They're a talking robot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but our phone number for those people who have not called us before or haven't called us in a long time, 802-321-4225. And I hear the phone ringing, so we have another person out there. And we'd like to hear what they have to say as well. Are they on, Kyle? Okay, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hi, I'll be less than a minute. You wanted me to call back with an update.
No, well, actually, you know, it's interesting how you're framing that. Basically, we're asking specifically that regular call is not calling this week, and you're telling us that we asked you to call. But, yeah, we asked for an update on your situation, so we will give you a minute to tell us an update on your, I assume, copper line situation.
Yes. I've called every phone company I can. None of them use copper. Verizon has changed their date to January 1st is the deadline that I have to agree to switch or I get disconnected. I'm trying to call various elected officials, see if that makes a difference.
Did you follow our advice and call the Public Service Commission?
Yes, I did. And that's what got Verizon to call back and say we'll extend the time to January.
Okay, all right. Now, I know it's...
Public Service Commission sent me to a different...
agency?
Yes. Agency, yes.
Do you know what they're called?
Oh, I had it written down somewhere.
Okay, well, here's the thing. You can always call them again. It's not like they're going to say, oh, you called us already. You know, they'll take another complaint. The fact that Verizon changed the date because you called the Public Service Commission indicates that, yes, indeed, they do have power. You couldn't have done that by yourself. If you call them again, maybe they'll postpone it more. If more people call them, that's pressure, and Verizon feels the pressure from the Public Service Commission. Now, it's a long shot. It's very unlikely that you'll be able to change their policy and their direction, but it's definitely unlikely if you don't try.
Well, I'm calling every elected official I can to bug them and hoping that will have an effect.
You're doing the right thing.
Okay.
All
bye-bye.
Right. All right. Good luck.
So crucial just to keep pushing, and I laud the effort. And
yeah.
It is that the more they understand that is, you know, an option, it should be an option, should remain an option for people that are not interested. Because otherwise, it's honestly, they're taking the power they have and basically harvesting customers by yanking service away from them for something that those customers don't necessarily want in the first place.
Right, right.
They're building in customers for a new service that's going to have unknown costs. They're not being upfront about any of that. They're just breaking people away, leaving them stranded, so that they need to come back and be a customer for some other service that is lesser or different, and it's really unfortunate behavior.
Let me just quickly outline why we feel this is an issue. It's basically... When you lose power, whether because of a storm or some other reason, oftentimes, if you have a landline, you don't lose the landline. You have a landline. There's many storms that I've been through, blizzards, hurricanes, where I haven't had power for a week, sometimes several weeks. But the landline is almost always there. This is not true of a cable line. This is not true of a VoIP line. This is not true of ISDN or fiber. Why? Because those require power on your end, whereas a copper line has the power in the central office. What's the central office? It's this big brick building that every community has where the phone company basically used to be, and they usually are still there, just in a reduced capacity because switches have gotten smaller and more people are using only cell phones. And great, you know, that should make the job easier if less people are using the network. What the phone companies want to do is just simply stop with the central office, with the generators that keep power in the central office, and hence has it sent to every single phone line, and allows you to stay connected. What we're saying is, don't cut those people off. Don't cut off the payphones. Don't cut off the landlines. Those people who want to continue using them, yeah, they'll have to pay a phone bill that no one else is paying, but when they do get a storm or some other kind of outage, they will be the ones that have landlines that work. Same thing with payphones. It's so important to have that because the cell phone networks go down. When you lose power in a community, they lose power too. And, you know, you can't charge your phone if you don't have power, even if the cell towers are still up. So there's all kinds of reasons why this is something that should be supported. And we just think it's very, very short-sighted to just say, okay, we have something new. It's kind of what we were saying before, only on a much bigger scale. Because we have something new, this means that something old can exist too. You can have both.
Yeah, the attitude that it's a direct competition is just wrong. There are still customers for Fios. It's not that there aren't ways around fiber or the shortcomings of fiber or that people can't customize the utility of it in an outage. It's just that some people, not everyone, is all in for that. They're not ready. They don't have the other elements that would make it work for them. And but it does not mean that others are not interested.
Okay, so I think we have a phone call. I heard the phone ring a few times. No, we have a dial tone. Okay, you know, if you're war dialing us, it's not going to work because people keep calling on and you'll go to voicemail, which we can't even get. 802-321-4225. New callers, people haven't called us in a while. Let's hear from you. 802-321-4225. 4225 spells hack, by the way. You know, we were talking about hackers defeating security, and this is kind of an interesting story. The Department of Homeland Security is launching this bug bounty program. They'll pay between $500 and $5,000, depending on the gravity of the vulnerability and the impact of the remediation. It's a scalable amount of money, but we consider that to be quite significant, said Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas at the Bloomberg Technology Summit. Never heard of that before. We're really investing a great deal of money, as well as attention and focus on the program. Hackers will earn the highest bounties for identifying the most severe bugs, DHS said. Some private companies offer much higher bounties for uncovering vulnerabilities. For instance, payouts from Apple can range from $25,000 to $1 million. Microsoft offers up to $200,000. But this is interesting. You know, with one thing that's not in this story, though, is how do you start? Do you just start hacking DHS and say, oh, you know, by the way, I found this, give me money now? You know, I think you really need to be clear about how to do this without having your door kicked in by federal agents. So if we get that information, we'll
I think what they mean is you acquire software or evidence of exploits that in the auditing of various systems or services that you encounter. It's not necessarily breaking into DHS.
How do you encounter it? You have to go to their site. All right, and then you have to start testing some things, right?
I don't know. Are they providing the stuff that they want to evaluate?
It's not clear. I mean, I'll give you the story.
Bug bounty program, it's just anything out there.
Uh-huh.
So they want to know about everything. This is for the cybersecurity initiative there to have advance warning of exploits, I think, before bad actors, as they're referred to, get a hold of them.
Alex, you have something, and we'll go to our caller.
Yeah, very quickly. I think it sounds like it could be a strange line, but there certainly is a line there because it's possible to identify vulnerabilities without gaining unauthorized access. Now, that would still be bad to do something without authorization on somebody else's system, but it is certainly also possible to identify flaws, vulnerabilities, configuration errors, things like that from just looking at the outside, too.
They hung up again?
What?
Yes.
You sure?
Who's that?
Is anybody on the phone? No, there's nobody on the phone. Wow. Okay, well, somebody either has no patience or is trying to prank us, and it's not going to work. we invented this, okay? 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. All the more reason why, if you haven't called us, call us now, because that's how... All right, let's pick up fast, and now we'll start talking. It's Delta. The Dolphin just called us. Wow. Okay, well, you know, we could just stop, too. Is that what you want? You want us to stop taking calls? Then nobody gets to talk. Rob, you have something?
While we're waiting for a caller, I'll just let you know that the U.S. Sun is actually a U.S. online edition of the Sun from the U.K.
Aha, uh-huh, that's what I thought.
Okay.
It is the British newspaper putting together an online edition for the U.S.
Wow. Okay, and I just stumbled upon them by accident.
It sounds made up. That's my point.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'm going to give it another 30 seconds, and then I'll have an announcement about phone calls. 802-321-4225. We appreciate those people who have not called us before or have called us a long time ago to call in now. 802-321-4225. Am I the only one who has something to say? Okay. We have a phone call? Hello, you're on
evening,
overtime. And this sounds like Bobson, who you are a regular caller. I guess my words mean nothing, do they? Okay, Bobson, go ahead.
I was glad to hear about the dates for Hope next July, but I have a question relating to that. Are you planning on streaming the Dutch Hacker Camp at Hope?
Well, that's an interesting question. We have not yet been in touch with the Dutch Hacker Camp people, but that is certainly something that we could do. We could have a whole area devoted to the Dutch Hacker Conference, so you could attend the Dutch Hacker Conference without leaving the country if they're amenable to that, and vice versa. So having that happen the same weekend, it's reminiscent of 1997 when we had a Dutch Hacker Conference the same time as Beyond Hope, and I think we're a lot better suited to simulcast it than we were back then.
They are very likely to be streaming, so it shouldn't be too complicated to get around it, but yeah, It's a conflict of some... in the timing of it, but...
I don't think so, because of, the people traveling from far away, it's more convenient if you're going to something local, but you can also connect to another event, and that's how we're looking at this right now, because there are plenty of people in this country and in neighboring countries that will want to attend Hope, but also it's a way to see the Dutch Hacker Conference at the same time. We won't be streaming the Dutch Hacker Conference. Obviously, they'll be doing that. But it's a way for our attendees to also share in that event.
And they're 6 hours away time-wise anyway. So
right,
it's
right.
Going to make it easier, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why having 24-hour conference, around the clock is a good thing.
Yep.
Anything else?
Well, no. Thank you for the show, and... it's been fun.
Well, thank you for listening. And it's very late over there in Bulgaria.
I think I'm partially using a copper telephone wire at some point.
Now, are they pulling this over there in Bulgaria? Are they trying to get people to disconnect their copper lines?
I think they attempted to do it at some point, but I don't know how far they got to it.
Uh-huh. Well, over there, people tend to rise up and stop things.
Or we can just get together and just help them disconnect it and just start pulling it out, taking down all the wires. If they don't need it, we should just help.
If they don't want it, give it to somebody who does. Let's have hackers run copper lines throughout the country.
I would prefer that, too.
Take over the central offices. We'll take over the wires. We'll answer the complaints from the customers. It's a better idea than disconnecting.
As far as I know, the power situation at central offices is not big generators, but big batteries in recent years.
Yes, that's true.
Batteries.
It's always been batteries because it's a negative 48 volt DC power system for the switching. The older copper
that's
analog switches.
Huh?
But I've seen them bring in generators when it's an extended outage. I've seen that happen at central
offices.
Yes,
that's typical in outages to power the batteries.
Oh,
yeah.
Thing.
What's that, Bobson?
The generators brought in addition to present capacities is a supplemental
mm-hmm.
thing in
right.
case of an emergency.
Right, because they usually have power, so there's no need for that. But what the batteries will last a very long time. It'll last weeks, so that's
a
good thing.
And they weigh tons.
Well,
yes, they're very heavy.
I say people think creatively, start a cooperative telephone company.
They have those.
Like we are. We're starting one.
There are. Okay, I'd like to. This is a challenge to listeners. There are places, in fact, we saw one. We took a picture outside a cooperative telephone company somewhere as we were driving across the country.
We did.
They exist all over the place. So if you're near one of those, like it's Citizens Telephone Company or something like that, find out, are they yanking the copper, or are they preserving the copper, or can they be convinced to preserve the copper when you have something smaller? And this is another reason why smaller can be better. That might be the hope. What if every community simply ran its own phone company? Hey, I think that would be cool. Okay, maybe not hackers, but just the community. So, you know, you have the Brooklyn Phone Company, and they're responsible for keeping the wired customers happy. What do you think?
Copper, huh?
Yeah, copper.
Well, I think it's worthy of some creative uses of old technology, and I know people will it will be weird. I hope it'll be very strange whatever happens, and mm-hmm. it doesn't just go into complete dilapidation and disrepair. I think it's ripe for some kind of cool alternatives that aren't run on the same model that infrastructure was run in the past, like
right.
that same
yeah,
business
it's,
model.
It's not going to be the same exact technology as it was back in the 40s or something like that. But the basics will be there. You know, the basic idea of you have a phone line that will stay up when other things go down, but it doesn't have the same capabilities as something newer, and the customer understands that. That's something that they agree to in exchange for having that dependability when they want it. I just think it's something that we should not throw away, and not like bookstores, we'll regret it if we do throw them away. Anything else, Bobson?
Well, nothing for now. I'm trying to plan the streaming in of various conferences for the coming July now.
Okay, well, I don't know if CCC is happening this year. Are you planning that one?
Well, that's in December.
This is December.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
CCC happening in a few weeks, maybe?
No, I don't think if it is happening, it's only online. Well, that's what I'm asking. Is it happening online?
Well, it's likely to be if they are doing it this year, but I'm not sure they are.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out and report back. Somebody will know because people are presenting things if it is happening. Anyway, good to hear your voice, and we might take one more phone call. Thanks.
Have a great evening.
Thanks for calling in, even though you're a regular caller, but that's okay. It's always good to hear Bobson's voice. We'll have time for one more phone call, and I guess it could be anybody, 802-321-4225, and then we'll be saying goodnight. You're reading Hacker Happenings, Kyle?
Yes, in 2600, the Hacker Quarterly.
Did you see the new issue came out?
Yeah, it did. It's really cool.
What a cover, huh?
I like this cover.
That's a good cover.
It's very clever. There's a reference, I don't want to give it away.
No.
Anyway,
we have a phone call.
Page 61, it describes various events, and it says the chaos,
hacker events, hacker happenings.
Chaos,
yes.
That's right. Chaos Communication Conference.
What does it say?
December 27th, 30th, as usual, an in-person event canceled. So more for information.
As usual? I didn't hear the first part. Something as usual?
December 27th to the 30th. Their dates never change.
Oh, yeah.
But not in person.
Not in person.
That's confirmed according to
2600. Okay, well, that's
good magazine.
It's okay. Yeah, it's good. I do things better. See if we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello. This is a special offer for people with...
Okay, you called already, and you called against our advice. And unfortunately,
this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you, right?
Yeah, it's let's give one more person a chance. Anyone but Rebel or anyone who has called in tonight.
I did.
Well, he did call in.
I did kind of want to hear the rest of that, but
802-321-4225. If the next call is Rebel, then we will take no more phone calls. How about that? That's the power that people have. But again, if you haven't called, or even if you have in the past, you may call us now. But we're going to be saying goodnight very soon.
That's who you get to do your recordings if you start a telephone company. Have Rebel do all the recordings.
Okay. I don't know what kind of phone company you're planning, but yeah, that would be interesting for sure. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK, and we'll give it a minute. Rob, looks like you have something to say.
I'm just going to throw in, even though we're on YouTube here, we still appreciate our home at WBAI and think you should do what you can to keep it going. 212-209-2950 or give to WBAI.org or towerfund.wbai.org to help us keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, you know, and radio is another example of technology that a lot of people say, yeah, it's past its time. It's, you know, you can get everything online. But no, you can't. You can't really just turn on the internet and listen the same way you can a radio in so many different places, so many different environments. Radio will always be different, and it'll always be low tech, something that anybody can access. When we do a show, we have no idea how many people are listening. There's anonymity in that as well. You can't watch the people looking at their IP addresses and say, oh, we have this many people tuning in. No, radio always will have that magic to it where you just don't know who's actually out there. And you find out years later somebody was listening at a particular key moment as they were driving in their car because they just pressed one button, and there we were. You know, that's the magic. And I hope that never goes away. Yes, Rob, you had something else?
That magic, too, just to speak on that for a bit. I use a site that's got a lot of subforums, and one of them is about radio. And I am seeing sort of an influx of posts from, I think, younger people who are asking, so what sort of stuff can I find on my radio airwaves? And, of course, this being on the Internet, and they don't say where they are or anything, so there's not much people in random places can do to answer that question for them. But the advice is always the same, you know. Get a radio. Start at one end of the dial. You know, work your way to the other end. See what's there. See what's there to listen to. What you receive. Maybe there's some cool stuff. Maybe there's some interesting stuff, weird stuff, whatever. But it seems like people are still taking an interest. Radio is far from dead. And I say this while we stream on the Internet, but, you know, radio is still very important. Analog terrestrial radio is still very important, and there is so much stuff out there. And, you know, wherever you're listening to this from, check out your local area. Check out what's going on that dial and see what's, like, blazing around the spectrums around you that you never even knew about.
If radio was dead, then all those companies that own radio stations would give them up, and they wouldn't sell for tens of millions of dollars each. That's rule number one. Okay, let's see who we have on the phone. Good evening. You're on Off Hook Overtime.
Hello, am I on the line?
Yes, you are.
Okay, yeah, and I just want to give you all a shout out. I'm all the way in South Africa, and
Oh my goodness!
I'm here in South Africa.
Wow, yeah. I don't think we've ever gotten a call from South Africa before.
I just thought it'd be kind of wild to just call in because your show is actually on in the lobby, and everybody's listening to it in the lobby.
Wait,
you know,
what lobby are we broadcasting in?
Well, it's a hotel lobby, and the guy at the desk, he says he listens to this show on the computer every week.
Okay, you are in the coolest hotel in South Africa. Let me just say that right now. And
maybe offline we'll find out or something.
If you want to tell us the name, and everybody in the community will stay there from now on.
I don't want to.
Okay,
yeah,
no problem.
He might get in trouble or something. You know?
Yeah, we don't want that.
But I just thought it would be kind of wild to just call in. But great show, though. Great show. Very entertaining.
Thank you very much. Is there much of a hacker community in South Africa?
I don't know. I don't know. I know there is in Nigeria for sure.
Really?
I'm not sure about South Africa. Yeah, I know there is in Nigeria.
Wow. You know. I guess, Rob, you have a question.
Carter, you're in South Africa, but you're in a hotel. Are you local, or are you visiting South Africa, or what's your story?
I'm just visiting. My neighbor moved down here, so I just came out here to see him, basically. I'm just visiting.
And where are you from normally?
I'm from New York, from New Jersey.
Okay. Wow. So
I've never heard this show before. I've never heard of this show until I came here, and I just heard it in the lobby, and I was like, that's
so wow. Have you heard of WBAI before?
No, I have heard of the other one, NPR.
Okay, all right.
I thought this was NPR. Yeah,
NPR would never let us do this. But and we're not actually on the radio right now. We're on the internet, but we were on the radio before and the internet. But when you get back to New York, be sure to tune to 99.5 FM, especially on Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Right, that's what he just told me. Somebody here just told me that.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well,
I am so happy that you, a New Yorker, went down to South Africa just to be introduced to a bunch of New Yorkers making New York radio. That makes me so happy.
Strange.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Very strange.
Caller,
yeah.
is it your first time visiting down there? And what are your impressions? What's going on other than hacking? What would you have to say about the area or your experience there?
It's so beautiful down here. Very nice. Very nice, but you know, there's a lot of crime here too. But if you're in the right locations, it's so nice. It's not even you won't even know you're in Africa, honestly. It's very nice here. There's a lot of anxiety with the COVID thing going on right now. There's
right.
some anxiety with that, but
Oh, I imagine there's a lot of concern.
The UK just took them off the list today, so they're able to travel
again.
Yeah,
that was horribly unfair because, you know, they discovered the Omicron variant in South Africa. It's not like that was the only place it was coming from. It was coming from all different countries as well who were not banned as far as the travel. So I'm glad the UK has taken that step.
Yeah. All right. Enjoy your show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling.
Appreciate you.
And please tell the person at the counter listening to us. Thank you, and give them our best.
Yeah, yes. keep listening.
Wow. Okay, that's why you hold out for the new callers, okay? We got a 9-year-old kid, and we got somebody from South Africa, and sandwiched in between all that, we have a lot of cool callers as well. So
thanks, everyone out there, for streaming and catching us on the radio.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to call it a night.
We'll be back with more stories, more news and updates about the Hope Conference and everything going on the WBAI airwaves, as well as in the Northeast and America and the rest of our world.
You can follow Hope News at hope.net, the website, www.hope.net. We will be updating it. Yeah, there's nothing there now, or very little there, but there's going to be a lot more and ways that you can get involved, and it's going to be an amazing conference in July at St. John's University. You can write to us, oth@2600.com, and you can donate to WBAI at give2wbai.org or by calling 212-209-2950. We will be back on WBAI next Wednesday, 7 p.m., also broadcast on the internet, and of course we will be on our YouTube Overtime next week at 8 p.m. on Channel 2600. So I guess that's it. Yeah, Alex, looks like you have something to say. You have your finger raised.
Yeah, I'm just amazed that we're able to have a whole bunch of hackers together for over 2 hours now, and nobody talked about Log4j. I think that deserves actually.
You know, I was going to bring that up, but I realized if I did, it's going to be another 25 minutes of discussion. But do you want to maybe just give it a one-minute summation, and we can talk about it next week?
I think we should end it right there, because I think it's wonderful that we haven't talked about Log4j, because it's so annoying. It's driving everybody freaking crazy. So let's not even mention it.
I have no idea what it is.
It's something that can infect billions of computers, I understand.
Ouch.
Billions, yes.
It's a massive remote code execution vulnerability based on a Java library that's almost everything. So it's a big deal. But it was nice not to talk about it. It was nice to talk about other things tonight, I have to say. I mean that sincerely. I'm not taking any dig at the show or us. I think it's a good thing.
I think he might be.
No doubt.
I think he might be. He's got his fingers crossed. Look at him.
I'm certainly being covered at holiday parties all over.
Do you think maybe people might be looking to us to say something about this and are very disappointed that we have not?
Well, we have now.
We didn't say anything, though. We just identified what it's called.
Log4j, now we're calling it log4shell, right? I mean, look, it's a terrible, incredibly dangerous vulnerability, and everybody needs to take account of this right now.
But Log4j is the Java library that's vulnerable. Log4shell is what we're calling the exploit itself.
Okay, quickly, what can people do to keep themselves more safe other than turning off their computers?
If you're running a network that has Log4j as a vulnerability, this is a very contested topic. There's lots of things that you can look for. There's certain things that you might just need to shut down. You need to update and patch if possible. If your vendors are giving you patches, you need to install and update them right away. But, you know, other than that, there's going to be, if you need to run a critical system that doesn't have an update and that's public facing, there's going to be a very severe remote code execution vulnerability on that system. And you need to isolate it and monitor it and make sure that it's not popped. And I think that, you know, one of the very dangerous things is that we anticipate that very soon this could turn into some kind of worm that propagates itself from one vulnerable system to another vulnerable system, incorporating automated detection of the vulnerabilities, and then automated exploitation of them. So it's a problem. It's a problem.
Is there a particular type of system that's vulnerable to this more than others?
No. The problem is this is like Rob had said, it's a really, really popular open source logging library, meaning this is a library that software developers will call and use things from to record what's happening on their applications. And during their applications, what's the computer doing during this function call? You know, things like that. All of this type of logging is it's a free and open source product, so it's incorporated in a gigantic amount of things, from services to IoT devices to, you know, it's everywhere.
So has a security fix been issued, or is there any kind of advice being given to people that might have this?
Well, because it's incorporated in all these different products, all of these different products need to address the vulnerability themselves.
Wow.
So you need to have updates from every single vulnerable piece of software out there that incorporates this. There's not just one universal fix.
Are there examples of the software that uses that people might typically be running themselves?
Oh yeah, I mean this was found to even be, you know, this was actually the finding of this originated in Minecraft servers. It was being passed, you know, this vulnerability I think was being exploited by having the chat function send this over so that the string of characters that's used in this vulnerability was then recorded to the log files in the Minecraft servers. And that's the other thing that's very scary about this, is that the exploitation for the remote code exploitation has a very, very low barrier to entry with regard to sophistication. It's simply a long string of letters and numbers, and you replace certain letters and numbers, you know, and IP addresses with where your malicious code is going to reside, and that's it.
Wow.
And any number of things that can be popped in this way. So it's a very severe and very easy exploit.
And is there any indication as to what happens when it is exploited? Is it ransomware? Is it systems crashing? Is it data stolen? What is it?
Yeah, I mean, it could be anything. We've seen reports now from lots of different sources saying, you know, at first the first exploitation of this actually happened before it was publicly released. Apparently, about there were signs of this 9 or 10 days before, so there may have been some leak of this ahead of time, or perhaps another a sophisticated threat actor had found it, but. When the code had been used maliciously, apparently the first exploits involved crypto mining, using some, you know, server's processing power to mine cryptocurrency. But then it quickly evolved into other more serious things, and I believe that there were reports of ransomware events already.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, congratulations to whoever figured out how to do this. Now we have to clean up the mess, and it's going to be interesting. But, you know, it's what we always say, that we can't become too dependent on technology or we will pay the price. And here's an example of something that apparently we were not prepared for. I mean, you said that every piece of software has to be updated. What if you're using a piece of software that no longer has updates that you're happy with, that you want to keep using?
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
That's a problem. Yep. And at that point, if it's not updated, you would probably have no indication from the developer, the manufacturer of the software, that it contained any remote code. So you might go on using it without any indication whatsoever that you had this vulnerability inherent in your system. But there's going to have to be, you know, better ways of scanning for this vulnerability within your software that are developed as well, because, you know, like, you know, much like the coronavirus, I guess, you know, this could be something that's with us for a very long time, and we may need to learn to live with this vulnerability as opposed to simply eradicate it.
Wow, that's quite a parallel there, Alex. That's that's something. All right.
That's
well,
something. Yeah, maybe we could end on that.
Yeah, cheery note to end on. Rob, did you have something else?
Just that if you go to Wikipedia and look up the article for this log4 shell, that's the word log, the numeral 4, and the word shell. There's been a very good article put together over there over the past few days about all this with, you know, excellent resources at the end of it. So if you're curious, and we don't have time to go even more into this, but if you're curious, that's a good starting place.
Well, I'm going to visit that right now. So thanks for bringing that up. We'll talk about it more next week, I'm sure, and there'll be a lot of changes by then. Again, write to us, oth@2600.com. We will see you next week. Good night.